Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Here's a friendly suggestion. Those beautiful views deserve some new frames. Custom designs and superior service make getting new windows a work of art. A free, no-pressure renewal by Andersen consultation is just a call or click away. When it's time to talk windows, we'll bring the wisdom. Renewal by Andersen.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the True Crime Society podcast with Stephanie and Olivia. And we are here 1 year out from when the entire pandemic started for here in New York. I know March 13th we went into lockdown. Today is March 7th. So last year this time, we were just living in bliss. Pretty sure I went bowling for my birthday. That's in a couple days. Just putting my fingers in random balls that other people had their fingers in, eating food, being disgusting.
Blowing out birthday cake candles.
Yeah, no idea what was going to happen. And that we'd never be able to do that again.
I think this time last year I went on a girls weekend and we flew up to Byron Bay and I saw Liam Hemsworth. So that was exciting. That was the highlight before all the lows.
But yeah, I know around this time the NBA shut down. I remember things were like starting to get sketchy because we were like, oh, is it going to come here? And I remember we went to lockdown on, I think it was the 13th or whatever the Monday coming up is. And then right before that Sunday, it was one of my boyfriend's friend's birthday also. We went out to brunch and we were like, should we be going out to brunch? Is it safe? And then it was like the next day everyone was in lockdown. Everyone had to work from home and everything was closed, but we did it, made it a year.
Unbelievable that this is what's happened.
It literally seems like ages ago. Like it seems like such a long time ago, but also I like can't believe it's already March of 2021 at the same time.
Even I saw, I think Lozzie was saying something about her work, how it's been, their lockdown's been extended till September, and that's only 6 months away from now, which is crazy.
That's so crazy. I'd be so depressed if that happens here.
I know. Hopefully with all these vaccine rollouts, it starts settling maybe a bit soon.
Yeah, hopefully. But it's also, you know, the pandemic brought on some challenges, but it also brought on us finally being like, all right, well, we might as well make a podcast like everyone fucking else has. So it's been just about a year of us having a podcast, which is also crazy. Our first episode was published on March 24th of last year, so we are probably recording it right around this time. I think a lot has changed since then. We've learned a lot's gotten better, learned some tricks, but still the same vibes.
I was just looking at our podcast stats. So we've had 250,000 downloads, which I think is pretty good for a first year little effort.
Mm-hmm. And we took a few months off.
Yeah, we did too. Our most popular episode was the Tote Family Murders, followed by the Daybells, and then Emery, Connery and Bailey Smith, and then Mums Who Murder. So they're the top four episodes, which, you know, I'm not surprised. They're quite
good ones.
Yeah, especially Emery and Bailey. I really like that one. I know it's wrong to say you like a murder suicide, but it's a really fascinating case that I don't know if we'll ever get any answers, but
very mysterious. All right. So sometimes we have some updates on cases that we covered in the past. Lori Shaver from the case with Michael Shaver, who was the one that was murdered and found dead in his backyard under a makeshift cement fire pit. His wife, Lori, was then arrested for because she seems the most likely suspect. She put out a GoFundMe recently proclaiming her innocence again and asking for money for some reason. I know Olivia has it pulled up, so she'll read a few lines from it.
So I think the GoFundMe is actually being taken down now. Don't know why, if someone reported it or whatever, but...
Well, because criminals aren't allowed to have one.
Yeah, well, that's true. So there was a 13-minute video. This is on our website on truecrimesociety.com if you want to check it out. But she released a 13-minute video that says, "I'm innocent." So you can go and watch that if you really want. But like, I'll just read some of the GoFundMe because it's a bit of a novel. But it says, "My name is Laurie Filmer, previously known as Laurie Shaver. Mr. Jeffrey Wiggs Esquire is representing me in the criminal charges that have been brought against me. Let me tell you up front and without reservation, I am absolutely innocent of these charges." That last bit is in caps. "I strongly suspect that I have been targeted for political reasons. The foremost is police apathy. The second is pressure created by estranged relatives. This matter remained on a cold case file status for years and had no evidence developed other than the pressures on law enforcement. I have ended up being charged." So the rest of it goes on about how what an amazing person she is. Like it says, "I am a good person who has a loving, caring, servitude heart that accepts all and always tries to see the good in people and does not pass judgment. Whenever able, I have always sought ways to help others, whether that's through monetary means of groceries, paying bills, buying gifts, preparing or providing meals, babysitting for single parents while they work." So she just basically goes on and on and on about how great she is, and why we should all be donating to her GoFundMe. So the last paragraph is long again, but it says, "They're in need of a minimum of $50,000. Mr. Jeffrey Wiggs has been representing me for 3 years and we suspect we have about 2 years left. Please help." And she signs up, "Respectively taking a stand against injustice. In love, Laurie L. Filmer."
I think it's going to be 2 more years. That's crazy.
I know. I don't know why. I guess they're, I don't even know how you'd even know the, maybe that's just what the timeline they've been given is. Yeah. So it's crazy. It's a long process, but I'm very glad it got taken down.
Yeah. And it comes with 13-minute long video of her sitting in front of like the ocean, looking like she's living life as if that's going to appeal to anyone to be like, "Wow, I better donate money. She's really struggling at the beach right now."
It looks like a budget infomercial, like something that you'd see.
Yeah, it's like produced. Shots of the ocean, like music in the background. I'll add in some clips as long as it's not taken down before I can get the audio from it. So
they can't be too hard up if they've got money to produce a video asking for money. So.
I'm coming before you guys today just to let you know that we have our suspicions, but I don't know why I've been targeted, why I've been set up, or charged with this heinous crime. I am not guilty. And anybody that knows me knows that my life is my children. I am a daughter, I'm a friend, I'm a neighbor, I'm a servant of God, I'm a wife, and I am a devoted mother of four. My life is my children. The well-being of my children has and always will be my top priority. And that is the reason that I would never cause any harm to the father of my children.
I'm shocked that her lawyer okayed this, but...
Yeah, so am I. Okay. But anyway, it's good for us. Good for the laughs.
Good for the memes. But today we're going to talk about two cases that are similar in the sense that they are two missing, seemingly pretty well off businessmen. They're both last seen at gas stations, and then their cars were found somewhere else, and they still haven't been found. They both went missing last year. So the first one is Alan White, and the second one is Jake Cifolia. So first, we're going to get into Alan White.
All right. So Alan's case is one of the ones, and it's still one of the most active discussions within our group as well. We've got a blog for him that Nikki did, if you want to check out all the background and, you know, more images and things like that about his case. But Alan was a 55-year-old man. He was living in Dallas, Texas when this all kind of happened. He's lived a pretty good life, it seems. He was a managing director for the accounting firm KPMG. Alan was gay. He'd married his partner, Rusty Jenkins, about 5 years before he disappeared. So at the time, they were living in a house worth over $1 million and Alan was driving a Porsche. It was a loaner car, but because I think his car was getting fixed or serviced or something like that, but was still a Porsche, which I don't know many car repair places that give you a Porsche to drive around. But
well, they usually give you something that's like comparable to the car you have. So whatever you had was probably also a nice car.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's what my thinking also was. So he went to the gym early in the morning on October 22, 2020, and he was last seen filling up the Porsche at a gas station. He drove away and basically has not been seen since. So when I was trying to kind of get a better timeline or a more thorough timeline, I found a really, really good post on Reddit, which I'll link on the blog as well. Nikki, as I said, has been doing the blog. So on the day that Alan disappeared, this information comes from Rusty, who's Alan's husband. He said that they each left their home in Dallas to go to their gyms at around 4:40 a.m. So they went to different separate gyms. I'm not sure where Rusty's was, but Alan's was LA Fitness at City Place, which was a 12-minute or an almost 4-mile drive from their house. Alan got there for when the gym opened at 5. He entered the gym and we assume he worked out. We haven't heard that he didn't, so I'm assuming they've checked that out. He did a quick workout and he was seen on CCTV leaving the gym at 5:38. He appears calm and normal and he's alone. He gets into the Porsche and he drives away. At around 9 minutes later, the last footage that we know of Alan was seen at the racetrack gas station. I had a look and it says on Google Maps, and it says that this location is 11 minutes from the gym, but he got there in under 10 minutes. So I think we can pretty safely assume that he didn't stop anywhere. He just went straight from the gym to the gas station. Rusty has since come out and said that this isn't the usual gas station that they would have used. That morning, there had been a robbery at another gas station or a 7-Eleven, and that there was all police blockades and roadblocks and things like that set up due to that robbery. So that's why Rusty and I guess the police believe that Alan kind of deviated from what would have been his usual stop and went to a different one.
Do you have like a usual gas station? I feel like I don't.
I do. Because I usually fill up on the way to work and there's one that I stop at and they've got a really good selection of snacks. So that's the one I always try and stop at.
There's definitely one I go to more than others because like it's on my way to and from work. That, and I think it's like cheaper than most. But I feel like if I went to a different gas station in the same area, like, because there's so many like right by me that I don't think anyone would side eye it and be like, that's not her usual gas station.
But it doesn't sound like it's a massive, like he didn't drive half an hour to go to just some random gas station. It just sounds like this one was close by and he went there instead of going to his usual one. So there's footage of Alan on CCTV at the gas station. You can see him putting gas into the car and he's apparently using his phone to text while he's there, which we're not allowed to do that here. I don't know if you guys are, but if you're on your phone while you're pumping gas, they'll come over the loudspeaker and they'll be like, pump five, get off the phone.
It used to be like more of a thing, I feel like, because sometimes I'll do it and then I look at the gas pump to see if it says you can't be on a phone. And I feel like the newer ones don't really say it, but I know it definitely once was a thing, and like I know you're like not supposed to be.
Yeah, I'll have to have a look next time, but yeah.
But anyway, I do it and I haven't blown up the place. So.
According to the Dallas Police Detective Eric Barnes, he pumps gas into his vehicle, he goes into the store, and he comes back out, he gets into his vehicle, and he drives off into the park, off the parking lot. At that point, there's no one in the vehicle with him. So I know you made a good video of the footage, but basically it just looks like he's texting or whatever he's doing on his phone. Like there's nothing unusual about the footage to me.
No, it's not very interesting. It's also like stop motion, almost like more like it takes a picture every 5 seconds or like it records little increments every 5 seconds. So it's not a streamlined thing. It's kind of like choppy, but it's just like what anyone else would be doing at the gas station.
I always find, even though I know I agree, it's not interesting, like nothing interesting actually happens. I always find when we know it's the last footage of them, I always find it more fascinating.
Well, yeah, definitely. Then you're just like, oh my God, he was never seen again after this. Look at him just getting gas. Like,
did he know he was never going to be seen again?
Like, what's he doing on his phone? Who's he talking to?
So even though we said he went to get gas at around 5:47, so, you know, the 10 minutes after he left the gym, there's from what I've read, there's a possible discrepancy because his bank records, which I guess they looked at after he disappeared, showed that he actually paid for the gas at 6:01 a.m. So if there is that discrepancy, that is, you know, maybe another 10 or 12 or whatever minutes that he is unaccounted for, and it shouldn't have taken him that long to get to the gas station, if that makes sense. So maybe he did do a little stop if there is that discrepancy. It's hard to know. You know, maybe the timing was just off, and who knows, which is the same with Elisa Lam, I think, too. Remember they said that her CCTV footage was, there was some weird discrepancy with the timestamp.
Yeah, I remember when I used to work at Sunglass Hut, we had cameras in there. We never knew how to, like, change the date or time or anything on it, so it could have just been off. But I wonder if, like, does it take, like, a little bit for the bank to actually get the processing, like which one's right. But maybe it could also be off because maybe he tried to go to his usual gas station and then saw the blockades or whatever and then had to like turn around and have a fiasco to try to get to another gas station.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
So Alan's niece has also said on social media that they've looked at his phone data, and basically the last data usage on his phone was at 6:01 a.m., which is the same time he paid for the petrol. So I wonder if he paid via his phone or if he, you know, maybe the texting that he was doing is the last data usage at around that time. So that's an interesting, after he got gas, he doesn't seem to have used his phone for whatever reason he was using it there for too.
Very strange.
So I found this directly from Reddit, and I'll just read out. It's an actual quote. It says, according to a researcher with exclusive access to case information and unreleased surveillance video, from what I've been told, Alan is clearly seen on the video in the racetrack, loitering in the store but not going into the bathroom. What stood out in the video was Alan was just hanging out in an aisle doing nothing. He never approached the checkout or bought anything. He just walked out after a minute or two and then returned to his car, still parked at the pump, and sat in the car for another 1 or 2 minutes. The tinted windshield makes it difficult to see what he was doing while sitting in the car, texting maybe. So I don't know. It sounds to me from that quote, if that is accurate, that he didn't actually pay the cashier for the gas. Maybe, like, I know here you can pay via app and all things like that. So I don't know if that was the case there or...
Well, you can also just pay at the pump.
Okay.
Is that not a thing for you?
It used to be a thing, but now they've just, everything is via app. So, when I say everything, the gas stations I go to, maybe some still aren't. So you used to be able to like just tap your card at the pump and pay, but it's different here anyway, because you never, and I don't know, I think it's different in states there, but here you pay for your gas after you put it in.
See, here you can go inside and pay too, obviously, but it's like you just put your card into the pump before you pump your gas, and then you
takes
pump
out
the gas.
Whatever you spend.
Yeah, and then once you're done, it's like, do you want a receipt? And you hit yes or no, and then that's it.
It's so weird that
you don't even really have to go inside. So maybe he was killing time or looking
for
a
snack. But it's weird that he went in and then didn't actually do anything. Like, he doesn't sound like he bought a drink or a snack or anything like that. It just sounds like he went in, hung out, and then came back out. So I guess, you know, maybe he went in just to have a look and then nothing took his fancy.
No,
I've done that
snacks.
Before.
Yeah, what kind of snacks are at this gas station?
We should have done more research into what snacks they have. So I don't know how this person also got this footage. I would love to see it. And I haven't been able to find it anywhere online. So I don't know how this person, maybe they know the racetrack person or something like that. But
That's true.
So at 6:05, so this is around 4 minutes after he allegedly paid for the petrol, Says the same researcher with exclusive access to video surveillance reports the following. When Alan pulled away from the gas pump, and you know, think about the time discrepancies and all that again, it was just after 6 a.m. Everyone presumed he would go home. He would go here via Inwood. It's a 1.3-mile trip to his house. But Alan makes a decision to linger one more time before leaving the racetrack, but in a different section. He drives 100 feet from the racetrack gas pump to Church's Chicken next door and lingers there. So he kind of drives these 100 feet, stops in the driveway of this chicken shop, doesn't get out, but he just kind of sits in the car. So it does seem like he's maybe deliberately lingering or killing time for whatever reason. Maybe and you know, as we said, if his data was used at 6:01, it doesn't seem like he was still texting or waiting for someone to be in contact with him, which is unusual. Yeah. Security cameras then capture Alan leaving the church's parking lot, turning right onto Inwood in the correct direction of his house at 6:05 a.m. So 6:06 a.m., 1 minute after, that the quote says, this next piece of evidence is critical. As stated above, security cameras captured Alan turning right onto Inwood from the church's parking lot in the direction of the house. But 4 to 5 blocks along Inwood Road is the intersection with Lemon Avenue. There is a CVS at this intersection, but the security cameras did not pick up any sight of Alan's car reaching that intersection. Traffic was minimal at that early hour and every car was clearly visible except Alan's car never showed up. So there's a 4 to 5 block window where he's turned off or stopped or something like that and just hasn't been seen since, which is interesting. Rusty had meanwhile returned home from the gym, and by about 6:15 he started to think it was strange that Alan had not returned home. And so this seems a little bit odd to me. You know, it's only a 10-minute time frame ish, you know, from when he would have gotten home, but maybe they just had real consistent routines. And
maybe around when he was at the gas station he was texting him and was like, oh, yeah, on my way back or whatever. Yeah.
So by 6:30 a.m., he was very worried. So Rusty did an interview with WFAA, and this is a quote from that. It says, when he wasn't home at 6:15, I thought it was odd. When he wasn't home at 6:30, I knew something was wrong. When he wasn't home by 6:45, I was panicking. I got in the car at 7, drove back and forth trying to find him, trying to find evidence of a wreck somewhere. I was calling the hospitals, trying to find out if there was an unidentified John Doe in any of the hospitals because I didn't know if he had his ID with him or not. So Alan was working from home at the time due to COVID, and he had been scheduled to attend a work call that he didn't obviously show up for at 7:30 a.m. So it seems like that day Rusty was quite frantic. I know that Alan's niece, I believe, was staying with him at the time as well, and they kind of did everything they could to find him. And by 11 a.m., so you know, only a few hours after he essentially went missing, they lodged a missing person report with the police. Rusty spent all that day and night trying to get access to Alan's, I guess, accounts, his computer, iPad, tried to ping his phone. And I don't know, from what I've read, I don't think they had much luck in doing that straight away. So then the search for Alan started.
He's an amazing friend.
It's been 5 days of stress.
It's honestly one of the strangest things I've experienced.
Matt Davies told me about his friend Alan White, who went to this Dallas LA Fitness at 5 Thursday morning. He was captured on video leaving the gym at 5:38, but he hasn't been seen since.
It seems like it's an episode of Dateline or something. You know, you know it happens, but you would never think that it would happen to you and your friends.
Alan was in a black Porsche loaner vehicle when he drove off. In the days since his disappearance, family and friends searched all over town.
It's just like he just vanished in thin air.
His brother Tim flew in from West Virginia.
I think the hardest part was when the flight landed at DFW, and as we were sitting on the taxiway, I just kind of lost it. Because the stewardess said, are you here for business or pleasure? And I went, I just gave her a little overview. I said, no, I'm really here for business, I guess, because I'm trying to find my brother.
The family hired a private investigator while Dallas police look for him too. They're working on a court order so they can try to locate his cell phone.
I feel that he's here. I feel he's somewhere around here. I feel someone has him.
Alan's a high-level executive for the accounting company KPMG and so much more.
He is a husband, a son, a brother. a friend.
And all those who love him, so hope he makes it home.
Nobody cares about the car at this point, or the phone, or money, or anything like that. We just want Alan to be brought home safely.
In Dallas, I'm Alex Rozier.
So Alan was last seen on Thursday, October 22nd. 1 week later, Thursday, October 29, his Porsche was found. So it was a 2019 Porsche Macan, and that was found in the 5800 block of Kitty Street, which was more than 15 miles from where he was last seen at the gas station. There's an interview with Detective Barnes from the Dallas Police, and he said, "This vacant lot is in a very secluded area. And it is known by the people in Highland Hills, and it's known by the Dallas Police Department." So that seems to me that maybe it seems like a bit of a shady area.
Like a drug deal area. Yeah, I know, and they parking lot.
Known to police. They've been called there many times, is my thinking.
Yeah.
Says police said the vehicle was parked between two sections of bushes and the keys were inside. So it seems like maybe they tried to hide it. Interesting that the keys were left in there. But also when they found the Porsche, they I think they discovered by then that Alan's coach bag, and it had, they don't know what was in the bag, but that was not in the car, and his phone was also not in the car. They said there was no signs of damage to the Porsche. I would love to know what the fuel gauge was in the Porsche based on how much fuel he put in the car, but I haven't been able to find that anywhere. But they said the seats in the Porsche were wet and there was mud on the tires. So according to the family, this is significant because they believe it indicates that Alan wasn't driving the car and he didn't park the vehicle, but that the vehicle was parked while it was raining. Maybe they had a sunroof or the windows were down, or I don't know, it's a bit strange. But when Alan went missing on October 22, it was clear and 70 degrees, but it did rain the following day, and I think it also rained then from October 25 to 28. So they're saying that basically suggests that the muddy tires in the wet car suggests that whoever was driving the car had been rained on. So I guess they got in the car with wet.
Not have been raining the day that he was last seen, I guess is what they're saying.
But then I don't really, I think that's it. But I don't get how, if they don't know where Alan is, they don't know that he's not the one that drove the car there.
Yeah, like he could have been driving around for a whole day.
Maybe they're saying because the car was found. But then also, if the car was found on the 29th, you think that the seats probably wouldn't be still wet. Like if it rained even the day before, I can get there'd still maybe be mud in the car, but it seems to me that if the stuff was still wet and if the windows were up and there was no sunroof and all that, that it seems to me that it would have been recently dumped there by someone who was wet. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming that the police would have checked for like fingerprints in the car. So hopefully they know that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I know. And I just wish they would tell us.
Yeah. What about us?
We need to know. There were some large gaps in, I said I had written there's large gaps in the investigation, but I think there's just large gaps in what they actually told the public.
Yeah, probably.
So after the car was found, which was October 29, there was nothing much else until November 20. So citing recent developments in the investigation, the Dallas police upgraded Alan's disappearance from want to locate to endangered missing person. They said they will not comment on what new evidence led them to reclassify his disappearance, but basically the New York Post, which who knows how true this is, but anyway, New York Post reported that an unnamed Dallas police sergeant told them that a recent discussion with White's family prompted detectives to make the upgrade. So I feel like this is leading, it's getting interesting, even more interesting now. So on December 4, the Dallas Police transferred Alan's case from the Youth Operations Division, which handles missing person cases via their missing person squad, to the Special Investigations Unit, which handles cold cases, which is unusual to me because it'd only been missing for 6 weeks. They've already moved it to a...
Insert leads, I don't know.
I don't know, maybe. I don't know why. I'd love to know the rationale behind that. So Alan's family also around this time announced that they were putting out a $15,000 reward for, you know, information in his case.
He's just so kind to people.
Filled with anxiety and heartache.
I didn't know what to do.
Era Lou Craven spoke of her son, Alan White.
Somebody has to know something.
As Dallas police try to find him.
And I won't say that he's gone until they tell me he's gone.
His family needs your help.
If anyone has seen anything, you know, please come forward. You know, no matter how little they think it is or insignificant it may be to them, it may be a big piece of the puzzle to the police.
If somebody's got him and he's hurt, bring him to us. We'll take care of him.
It'll be 3 weeks Thursday.
The longest 3 weeks of your life.
But his family has faith.
I think he's still alive somewhere. I really do.
And they're hanging on to hope.
I'd just love to see his face again and him say, hey, Mom.
In Dallas.
I don't understand this.
I'm Alex Rosier.
I don't understand it at all.
I hate to see his mother suffering like that, and White's family is so desperate to find him. They've put up a $15,000 reward. You can learn more by clicking on Alex's story on WFAA.com.
On January 15th, 2021, the Dallas police said they're waiting for test results to come back from the Southwestern Institute of Forensic Sciences in this case. Chelsea Geist also said that they're waiting on warrants. She said a separate warrant was required for Apple and then for each and every app on his cell phone. It's a very difficult and time-consuming process, unfortunately. I never even really consider that they need it for all the apps. You think that if you download the app, that kind of gives Apple ownership over the data, but maybe it doesn't work like that.
Yes, because the apps must be the ones that have the data.
Yeah.
Like on Snapchat, say, like, who you're talking to on Snapchat and who you're sending pictures to on Snapchat. Like, Snapchat must have access to all that, not Apple. It's so annoying that they haven't thought of, like, another way to do this. 'Cause I feel like in every case, it's, like, a problem where they're waiting on stuff from Apple, stuff from whoever. And it's always, like, a fiasco because the apps and Apple especially doesn't want to give up the information.
Yeah.
Because privacy.
Yeah, interesting. So as of now, March, 7th or 8th, we haven't really heard anything else about his actual phone data. I don't know if we ever will. Hopefully we will.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
So we just kind of waited, everyone was chatting about what happened, no real new information until February 5th. So Alan and Rusty's home sold, which is interesting in itself, but they sold the house for $1.755 million. And the most interesting part is that Rusty used power of attorney to sell the home. So Elena, who's in our group, she is very familiar with Texas real estate, I guess. And she was saying that basically in order for Rusty to use the power of attorney, he has to be able to prove that Alan is alive. If Alan was dead, which obviously they still can't prove either because he's missing, the power of attorney would then be null and the property would go into probate. You know, according to multiple sources from what I've read, there is no way in Texas that Rusty would have been able to sell the house without being able to prove that Alan is alive. And so at the same time that they sold the house, they also, or Rusty, I guess, purchased a condo in both Alan and Rusty's names. They were both named on the power of attorney, as well as Alan's sister Tina and his mother Mara Lou were all on the power of attorney. So this, it's fascinating. I would love to know what is going on with all this. It seems like the people who know what they're talking about are adamant that he has to be alive with some proof of it for them to use the power of attorney.
But I wonder if Rusty was able to argue that, like, you can't prove that he's dead either. Like, he could be alive.
But I know, even in the case of Pawpaw, Michael Chambers and all that.
Yeah, I was just thinking of that one too.
Becca, his wife, she got him declared dead really, really, I think less than 3 months after he went missing, and he's still missing, but she's successful, and I've been, that she's shady as well, but she successfully had him declared dead. So I feel like in most missing person cases, if they need to do something like this, they have to have him declared dead. you know, that they would have to have him declared dead, which makes me think maybe there's a reason why they can't do that.
Yeah.
So anyway, I pulled some quotes from people, you know, during this discussion. So basically there's two types of power of attorney. There's a durable power of attorney and I guess just a normal one. The durable power of attorney allows someone to make decisions when someone is incapacitated, but they have to be alive. So it could be a coma, dementia, Alzheimer's, something like that. But both types of powers of attorney become obsolete when someone dies. Mm-hmm. Another quote is, I've never heard of a loophole for a power of attorney ever. What I do know is that a title company cannot proceed with a sale without having proof of life. I've literally never heard of that happening. A power of attorney is only for living people. So then someone wrote also, you cannot use a power of attorney without verifying that the principal is alive. Any title company and underwriter to the insurance would require this. No title company in Dallas, knowing this case, would close with this power of attorney without confirming he's alive. Otherwise, they're liable for a $1 million lawsuit when the buyer sells. So it sounds like there isn't really even a chance that they could have done this if they weren't able to prove that he was alive.
Very weird.
It's very strange. And I know it's very confusing as well. Like, because I always think a power of attorney is for someone who isn't able to make, or, you know, be there and make the decisions for themselves, which I know there's other ways, but it just seems it's hard for me to get my head around all this.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the biggest takeaway is that it seems like they'd have to have most likely proved that he may be alive somehow, or is definitely alive somehow, which I don't see how that's possible. Obviously, we don't know all the evidence and stuff, so maybe he has been using something or someone's been using something of his. Like in any other situation, if that wasn't the case, I would have said I'm 100% sure that he's most likely not alive.
It's interesting to me. Like, I wonder if the power of attorney, you know, stuff is related to them updating his missing status from want to locate to endangered missing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, so I just tried to have a look to see if I could kind of get a definition of the classifications for missing people and why, you know, why they would have changed it. But basically it says the usual definition for missing and endangered, it says it's the default classification for minors under 18 and elderly persons over 65. An adult between those ages will be listed as endangered missing if they have medical condition or are missing under circumstances that indicate they may be endangered, which is interesting. So maybe he's run away to join a cult or something like that, and they kind of know, but they don't know where he is.
Yeah, I don't know. He just seemed to be like acting so chill at the gas station. Yeah. He's like, well, say I'm running away, joining a cult or
and they
whatever.
Were like, I know that there's been a lot of chat in the group too about his or their financial situation. So apparently they remortgaged, and when they sold their house, they would have had either a very, very small mortgage or no mortgage at all to buy the new condo because I guess they were downsizing. So that, you know, people are indicating that that is not a reason. Like, it wouldn't have been for financial reasons that he would have taken off and done this. But I guess, you know, again, we don't really know what goes on behind closed doors. Who knows what other debt they had or anything like that. But there's nothing really recent, you know, since that on this case. However, while I was just looking today to make sure we hadn't missed anything, on March 6th, which was 2 days ago, there was an article released by NBC and it says the body of an unidentified man was recovered Saturday from the Trinity River. Canoers spotted the body in a tree or brush area in the river between Dallas and Irving. They called to Dallas Fire Rescue said that they were called to assist with the body at 11:34. So I've had a look at a map that someone's done for us in the group, and the body was found around 20 miles from where Alan was last seen. I feel like this probably isn't Alan, but I just thought I'd add it in just in case. I wonder if now from October to March, he would still actually be classified as a body, maybe, like, you know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I guess it's been
especially
cold.
Do you just say it was in a river?
Well, it says they were called to the river, but then the body was spotted in a tree or brush area. So it doesn't actually say if the person had been in the water and got washed up or if the person was just in the tree area.
Yeah.
Also read a comment that said apparently there's a lot of bodies that are washed up in that river. Apparently there's some dodgy areas around there. So I don't think it is Alan. I said to Stephanie, imagine if it was. It always happens that there's some update
Yeah.
When we record. So that's why we thought we'd add it in. But I feel like it's probably not him.
This episode's going to come out pretty fast, though, because we're recording it kind of late than we usually would. Because I'm going to put it out in like 3 or 4 days. So what's the most that could happen in that time?
Who knows? So, yeah, see, I'm just looking online now. There's, you know, some stuff from the end of November, but that is pretty much it.
Do you have a theory or anything that you think? It's so vague that it's like hard to even think of one.
It is vague. And like, you know, for example, he doesn't seem to have, well, I have never seen him having any type of criminal record.
Yeah.
I just feel like the loitering and the kind of using the phone makes me think that maybe he was waiting for someone, or
if that's even true.
I mean, I don't really have a, I don't think I have a theory in this one. Like I suspect he's probably dead, or I don't know, maybe not. I guess then, I would have absolutely said he was dead until this power of attorney stuff.
Yeah.
And now I'm not. So my other theory is that if he is, maybe they know that he's gone to live, you know, start a new life, either for maybe religious reasons or like maybe he's mentally ill.
Mm.
But I figure if they had that kind of proof, they would surely kind of know where he was generally.
Yeah. I've seen so many theories online. Like I was trying to read a bit on Reddit before we started, and I saw some people wondering about like what apps were on his phone. Like, could he have been meeting up with someone? Like, on like, of course, everyone just automatically says Grindr because he's gay. Like, as if every gay uses Grindr. But could he have met someone there and then something happened? You know, could he have been using drugs or anything? And could that have gone wrong? Like, is that why he was loitering around? Like, it seems like he was waiting for something. That the loitering is true. But there's other people who are like, you know, maybe he just fucking left and started a new life. But I'm like, why would you go to the gym before you leave and start a new life? I wouldn't.
And it's like for half an hour, like it just,
Why are you going to get gas to just leave your car?
Yeah. And also it's interesting to me that the police seem to have reclassified his missing status after they got information from the family. So what – I feel like this thing's been hidden here that we don't know, or maybe not hidden, but they just haven't been open with the public about them.
It makes it seem like – because obviously he had a lot of money. Like could there have been like a ransom hostage situation? But you'd think – well, I guess it could have happened and we don't know, like that someone would have asked for a ransom by now. So maybe they did, but we just don't know that. Like is someone holding him captive for money or I don't know.
I when I was looking to see if there's any other articles, there was one from January by the Dallas Voice, and it was just saying basically what we talked about, how they're still waiting to hear from Apple and everything like that. But there's some interesting comments. I'll just read two of them. Someone called Looking to Help wrote, "Guys, I can tell you for certain there are things happening in this in this investigation you are not aware of. It is nice that the police share this information to let us know that there are some stones they are still looking to overturn. But I know that there is more to this as well as those close to the investigation. We will learn about some of those efforts and leads in time. As someone closely following this investigation, I'm aware of some things not shared here, but I was not aware of the fact they were still looking to tap into Apple's records. That is actually reason to hope, not be angry. This means there may yet be a breakthrough in this case that may lead to a viable suspect to finding Alan and then arrests." And then the comment under that is from someone called Tina White Huddleston, and she has written, "I am his sister. They aren't telling us things because they want an open and shut case. We are putting our faith in Dallas and the police to solve this. Frustrating to you, think about us. Or if it's frustrating to you, think about us, his family."
Hmm.
So it seems that's an interesting comment as well.
Very
and then
serious.
Tina also commented saying that, so someone wrote, "A separate warrant for each application on his one phone." They're like, excuses, excuses. And then someone wrote, "I don't believe they have the phone," which means they have to request info from the makers of each app. And then Tina commented again, and she confirmed, they don't have the phone, they have to get warrants.
Yeah, and that can take months and months.
Well, that's the end of January. So, you know, that's already 3 months or whatever from when you let me see them.
I feel like
still didn't have them.
I feel like I've always heard from other investigations that like Apple always gives like a hard time trying to get access to these things.
Yeah, I've heard that too. And they always like, I don't know why, like I get the whole privacy thing, but then there's obviously a very clear situation going on here. It's not like someone's just ringing up trying to get someone's random phone records. There's police involved. It must just be a slow process.
Yeah. But
so that's it for Alan, I think. Hopefully we'll get some updates soon. It's kind of been a low-key case for me for what it is, like a kind of a affluent guy just totally gone, and there just hasn't been that much on it. So
one more thing. I saw on Reddit, like, people were trying to be like, oh, what about Rusty? Like, I really, like, people were trying to say, like, he must be involved somehow, but I really don't see that. Like, I feel like, I don't know, I just feel like I don't see it. Do you?
No, I don't think so. I think that Rusty probably maybe knows more about his maybe state of mind or whatever was going on.
Yeah.
But I don't think Rusty's involved in his disappearance.
No, and it'd probably be easy to prove that he was also at the gym or not or whatever.
Yeah.
I feel like if Rusty was involved, it'd be solved by now.
Yeah, exactly. And like Rusty, I've seen videos of Rusty and, you know, he seems just based off his videos, you know, I don't think he's involved. I think either Alan had something going on or was involved in something shady.
Yeah. I used to think like it was like a carjacking or something because he, you know, had a nice car and there was just like a robbery in that area. Like, and plus that vacant lot they said is shady. So it seems like could have been a shady area. But now, like, but then hearing the loitering stuff, it, like, seems like could he have been waiting for someone or killing time for some reason. So it's very mysterious. It is one where I don't even really have, like, a theory, but I'm very interested for this to be solved.
When I look up Kitty Street on Google Maps, it's actually, like, a tiny little street. It's like a dead end.
Yeah.
Like, I'm on there right now. I'll put it on the blog. But when you have a look, like,
there's like nothing
maybe
there.
Five or six. No, there's like rubbish dumped there. It looks quite secluded. Like there's, you know, some, it doesn't look like there's much around. There's some like little.
But it seems like a place that you would maybe go to if you were trying to do a drug deal.
To do a drug deal. Yeah, exactly. Like that's what I was going to say. It's quite secluded. Doesn't look like there'd be any through traffic. So, you know, the significance of where that car was found. And when I'm looking at it now, I can see what they mean kind of in between two bushes because it's very overgrown.
It's also weird, like, his bag and his phone is missing. Like,
yeah, that is weird. And why did he have his bag anyway? Like, if he wasn't
just going to the gym. Was it like a gym bag?
Well, it said it was a Coach. I'll just find the actual wording. Hold on a minute.
Like, I used to work at Coach, so. I have insight.
It doesn't sound to me like it's a work bag. It says Alan's navy and maroon two-tone Coach sling bag.
So it could be a gym bag, though. A sling bag? Because I feel like, I don't know, Coach's men bags, like they had a lot of just like little like weekender type totes that you could probably use as a gym bag or just a bag to put stuff in.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Like, okay, like, so there's a, I think it's to me,
like a getaway bag.
I assumed it was kind of like when they say a sling bag, kind of like a crossbody bag. And I think it is. It looks like it's very small. Like if this is the right bag and they have released the right information, it looks like it's just like something that you carry your wallet and your phone. And it doesn't look like it's big enough to put like a gym towel and a drink bottle and things like that in.
Yeah.
So I don't know, maybe that was his kind of business bag, but it's interesting that he had that in the car. Maybe he just carried it everywhere.
Yeah
like it looks like anyway so I think that's it for Alan. Hopefully we'll hear something else soon, but very mysterious one.
Yeah. And then next we're going to talk about Jake Sefolia from Elmhurst, Illinois, which as we go through the story you'll see there's a lot of weird similarities. Obviously they're, I'm not going to say definitely, but they're most likely not related since they're nowhere near each other, but it's just weird how common, I mean, how many things they have in common.
Yeah, definitely.
911, what's the address of your emergency?
On the surface, Jake Sefolia seemed to have it all.
He works for United Airlines.
A telegenic top executive at United Airlines.
It is just an absolute thrill to welcome you all to our hometown.
At age 49, a senior vice president of worldwide sales.
I have somebody at United checking to see if he's on a flight somewhere.
Sefolia was a divorced father of two who lived in West Suburban Elmhurst and often saw his son and daughter.
He missed his night with the kids.
Tonight, 66 days after his ex-wife, Christy, called 911, Jake Sefolia is still missing.
Something's just absolutely not right.
So Jake was 49 years old. And he was the senior vice president of worldwide sales for United Airlines. And on August 7th, it was a Friday, he took that day off. So he was last seen that morning on surveillance at a gas station at 9:30 a.m. filling up his Range Rover. So again, last seen at a gas station in the morning filling up his luxury car.
Luxury car.
Yeah. So on August 8th, a deputy from DuPage Sheriff's Office who was patrolling the area noted that at 1:30 a.m. and 2:30 p.m., so it's the day after he was seen on footage gas station, that a Range Rover sat unoccupied on a gravel road near Waterfall Glen Forest Preserve. So there's no missing persons report or anything at this point, so I guess the deputy was just driving around, saw the car, made a note of it. Not a major red flag at the time. So then a few hours later, Jake's ex-wife, Christine Sefolia, reported him missing after he didn't show up for a meeting with their kids and she couldn't get in touch with him. So Forest Preserve officers then connected the car to Jake and immediately they started a canine search of the preserve at 9 p.m. that night looking for him. So he was known to run at that preserve, so that could be a reason why he was there. Maybe he got lost. Who knows? But, you know, they did the search. Nothing turned up. They got into his car. There was no signs of foul play or suicide or anything like that. There was no note found inside the car. The only thing they found in there was his sweatshirt, some golf clubs, face mask, and a first aid kit. Nothing overly exciting. So to this day, there's been various searches of the preserve in that area, and he still hasn't been found. But it's been revealed by police since then that Jake was under some sort of criminal investigation, but they haven't released any details on what that investigation actually was or what it involved.
I'm surprised nothing else has come out about that. Like, you'd
think, it's weird.
It's very strange.
Or that, like, no one that knows him, like, has said anything about it, or I don't know. So leading up to his disappearance, the last person to see Jake was his son, who left his father's house on the evening of August 6th, so the day before he was seen at the gas station. He left that night, and he said that his father, Jake, was extremely drunk. And this is all coming from the police report that one of the news agencies got a hold of. I think it's the Patch. From there, Jake didn't answer any calls or texts from his family, and Christine, his ex-wife, became worried. So she went to his house to check on him on August 8th, 2 days later. His car wasn't there, but there was a note on his door from one of his coworkers named Joe Tibble. I don't know what the note said, and I couldn't find what it said, but they talked to Joe later, so... So after this is when she thought it was weird and contacted the police. She told the police that her ex-husband suffered no mental illness to her knowledge or took any medication, but she said that he might have a drinking problem. She also told police that Jake fantasized about going off the grid and having no electronics or communications with others. Joe Tibble, the co-worker, told police he was at Jake's house around 7 p.m. on August 6th, the same night that the son was there, and said that he was drunk. And this was about an hour before the son actually left. He said that Jake told him that he broke up with his girlfriend in San Francisco named Wendy, and he told him it's all Wendy's fault. There's no context to that, but it's Wendy's fault, apparently.
Yeah, that they broke up.
Yeah. So Joe also told the police that he found it unusual that Jake took off the next day, which is the Friday that he's seen at the gas station. I guess maybe he didn't take off a lot or had no reason to. So Joe checked his United Airlines flight logs, because I guess when you work there, you could just fly wherever you want. and he saw that Jake's last flight was on August 5th, a day before he was last physically seen from San Francisco, which is where Wendy lived. So the police then got in contact with Wendy Rodriguez, who said that she broke up with Jake a few weeks before, but he wanted to get back together. Her birthday was August 4th, and that Jake was there and stayed the night. So that seems to explain the flight from San Francisco the next day. Wendy told police that Jake mentioned something about wine to go into the mountains to be alone. She said that he had been stressed over work and was drinking more than usual, but didn't make any overly concerning statements. To me, if someone said they wanted to go off into the mountains and be alone, I'd be like, what?
Yeah, and like something about wanting to go into the mountains and be alone. Like, yeah, you'd think he'd ask more information about that.
Like, what do you mean? Especially like a business executive. It's not like he was an avid hiker doing this on the regular.
I guess it could have just been like a bit of a throwaway statement. Like, he might have just been like, oh, I just wish I could go into the mountains and get away or something like that. Like,
yeah, true. But,
yeah, that is unusual.
I'm sure I've said that before, but it's something I would definitely never do.
I'd say go to a hotel and be like, I wouldn't be going into the mountains.
Yeah, I'd say like go to the beach, like.
Yeah.
Then police spoke with Jake's sister named Jenny Horan. She told police that her brother came over with his kids on August 2nd and that he seemed to be in good spirits. But she made the police aware of another of Jake's girlfriends named Dina. So it seems like he had two girlfriends, which could also, you know, add to some of that stress, juggling two girlfriends. One lives in a different state. I'm not really sure where Dina lived, but seems like a little hectic. Dina said she last communicated with Jake around 2:30 p.m. on August 6th by text message, after which he didn't respond. Dina said that Jake was supposed to come over for dinner on August 8th, but didn't show. So police continued their searches through the summer, but found no sign of him and there's not really any other insider police report information that's been released since then. In November 2020, police returned to the area after, you know, all the leaves had fallen, hoping that would give them better visuals of the area. They went back in with smaller teams of officers and were able to look deeper into the woods and off the trails. NBC Chicago spoke with DuPage County Forest Preserve Chief David Peterson, and he said to them, "Now the leaf foliage is down, it gives us a different perspective, so we are taking another look. We're doing so because there hasn't been any other lead or any other information regarding Jacob Zafolia." He also said, "I thoroughly believe it would be nothing but a recovery effort if he's in the forest preserve at this point."
Yeah, I think that would go without saying for that long. November 2020.
Especially in Illinois, it's really cold and very wintry and snowy.
It's interesting to me that they said that they were, you know, might get a better picture once the leaves are down, because maybe that thinks maybe they're looking for him in a tree, possibly. Maybe they think that he might have harmed himself up a tree by hanging or whatever. But
yeah, I was wondering what the woods there looked like. Maybe there's a lot of brush too, so it just kind of would be less dense. So maybe they could see better, like if you're dead under a bush or something. Like,
yeah, well, that's what I was thinking. Maybe if he was on the ground, it would be harder because then he'd be covered by leaves.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems, who knows? We're not the one searching. So. he also gave more information on their initial searches. He described the initial search efforts for Jake at the 2,000-acre forest preserve as massive, saying, "This has been one of our most extensive searches with a lot of resources, volunteers to law enforcement, staff and drones to aircraft thermal imaging. We really put in a lot, including some water searches in the nearby Des Plaines River." So now they're doing smaller searches that go deeper into the woods in little teams. He also told them that this is a place where people can feel secluded and go back to nature and maybe feel some peace. So he's thinking maybe he went off into the woods somewhere, I guess.
If you look at photos, like, it does look beautiful. There's heaps of waterfalls, heaps of waterfalls and things like that. But it does look like a place where if you go off the trails, you could definitely.
Yeah, I saw in the same article that I was reading these quotes from, they said that there's times where like the officers kind of had to like yell to each other so they didn't get lost in the woods or anything. So this is a dense, big, confusing area if you go off the trail.
Yeah, there's a website. It says the 2,503-acre Waterfall Glen Forest Preserve is one of the most ecologically impressive parcels. 11 miles of trails popular with hikers, bicyclists, horseback riders, and cross-country skiers. So you think, though, it sounds like it's quite a popular place for all these things to happen, but I guess he could just be so hidden that no one's been able to find anything if he's there.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's really all the information as far as, like, the searching and what led up to it. There hasn't been a lot said, but recently, similar to Alan, the sale on his house was finalized, but he listed his house for sale in June of 2020. So despite him being a missing person, the house was able to go under contract and make it to closing because in May 2018, Jake gave power of attorney for the property to his relative, Rudy Piedra. And a document authorizing Piedra with those powers was recorded with DuPage County at the same time as the November 5th sale. Jake paid $560,000 for the house in 2016. In June 2020, 2 months before he went missing, Jake listed the house for sale for $589,900. I'm so bad at saying numbers sometimes. I'm always like, am I saying this right? He then reduced the asking price to $574,900 in July, and then again to $549,900 on August 3rd. The house went under contract August 5th, and several days later, he disappeared. I mean, it seems like he was kind of desperate to sell it for some reason if he like would be losing money on it at this point. I mean, not that I have no idea, but as such a big executive vice president at United Airlines, you'd think that money wouldn't really be too concerning. But
I know that someone, like, because I followed this case from the start as well, and I know that some people were suggesting because he actually worked for an airline and then COVID, and he was in sales for an airline as well. So that surely his sales, like, I don't know what capacity he was in sales in the airline, but you would think that that would have been one of the hardest hit industries by COVID and people not being able to travel or not wanting to travel. So.
Yeah,
I know at the time there was a suggestion that maybe it had something to do with that. But then in a sense, he was just, I don't know, maybe he did work on commission, I don't know, but, you know, essentially he was just an employee. He wasn't an owner of the company or anything like that. So you would think his liability would be somewhat limited if there was something financial going on, but who knows?
Yeah, and plus it's like you never know how someone handles their finances. Like maybe he had a gambling problem. Maybe he just liked to spend a lot of fucking money. Who knows?
I remember at the time too, I looked at his house, like, and the listing's still up. I'll pop it on the website as well. But like, so his house is lovely. It's just a nice, very neat, but it's almost kind of sparse and barren. Like there's not a whole amount of furniture. Some of the rooms are empty. There's like a foosball table, a gaming consoles, bar, things like that. And there's obviously a room that is very clearly must be, I don't know, I think he only has one child maybe, or anyway, there's one room in the house that you can tell is definitely a kid's room. It's got like Stranger Things posters, and maybe he has two kids because there's another room that has Chicago Cubs.
Because I think the wife said he missed a meeting with their kids.
Okay, that makes sense. Because anyway, there's two rooms, I guess, that could possibly be kids' rooms. So, but it's very neat and tidy, and you know, just a little bit barren, I guess. But
yeah.
So yeah. So the listing's still up online. You can check out what his house was like if you like to be a bit of a creep like me.
Yeah. But I also thought it was interesting. I mean, you said it might not be weird, and obviously I have no idea because I'm not buying a house because here I am. But like that he gave power of attorney to like make these types of decisions to his like relative when he's a single guy and isn't like incapacitated or. I mean, you don't think that he has some terminal illness, but maybe because he was so busy as like such an executive, if maybe you want someone else to help him handle it, I don't know.
But then it's interesting to me too, I guess maybe because the sale was in process before he went missing, but it's interesting to me that they were still able to go and sell the house if like, so it's almost the opposite of the Alan White case. So in this case, they, you know, used power of attorney and everyone thinks that maybe now he's alive, but I wonder if that's still... they still had to prove that for Jake as well, or if maybe because the sale was in process before he disappeared, they could continue with it.
Yeah, I don't know. But he also gave his relative power of attorney in 2018, so.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
I suspect in this case it may be different because he initiated the sale himself. So that would be my reasoning why this doesn't mean that Jake is alive, which people think Alan may be alive now because of the power of attorney stuff.
Yeah, because it's like clearly he wanted to sell the house.
Yeah.
But so in a totally different side drama, because of course, just so we can have some laughs, maybe, if anything. Of course, there is Facebook drama with this case. Similar, has some shades of mostly harmless in a way of people just doing the fucking most for no reason. So according to the Elmhurst Patch, they said that the main Facebook page in search for missing Elmhurst resident Jake Sefolia has turned into a place for arguments. Shocking. Many are questioning the intentions of its creator, who claims to be working for his boss, Zuck. He admits he has never met Sefolia. Meanwhile, a rival Facebook group formed this week, with members contending the other page has censored their views. It's like a day in the life, right?
Yeah, no, crazy.
So the group was created by a man named John Wynn, who has no connection to Jake. John posted a video of himself in the group where he announced himself as the administrator of the group and said that he had been in talks with his boss, Zuck. He also referred to the Elmhurst Police Department statement that Sefolia was under criminal investigation since before he disappeared. He said, this is a quote, "We both think Jake is alive right now and well, and we're going to do what we can for assisting Jake for clearing his name, and then we'll see if we can get him to come back. Jake's a great guy. He needs to be fully cleared. Like I say, I've been in talks with my boss, Zuck, so I really think this entire thing is going to have a good ending." Elmhurst Patch contacted him through Facebook Messenger and asked whether he knew Jake. He sent back a voice message saying, "My relationship is with Zuck. I work with Zuck. He has me doing many things. I have a lot of things. I have 25 groups that I'm the admin for." When asked for when asked for Zuck's full name, John said it was Mark Zuckerberg. It was Mark Zuckerberg, the Facebook founder. He did not provide proof that he worked for Zuckerberg when asked, only saying, "Ask Zuck." People began to realize clearly that John Wynn seems a bit unhinged, and a new group for Jake was created by an acquaintance of his named Alicia Bailey. She said she belongs to a number of true crime groups on Facebook, and she said that Wynn's page had problems, so she felt like it was her calling to step up to the plate. She said she recently left her job at United Airlines after 15 years and met Jake Sefolia once. So she says she has no personal interest other than general intrigue. So the search for Jake continues, but the question remains as to whether the answer to this mystery is somewhere in Waterfall Glen Preserve or somewhere else.
It's interesting to me because I tried to have a look and find these groups so I could kind of see what was going on. But the only one that I can see that still exists is one called Support Search for Jake Sefolia. And then the two admins aren't John Wynn, or is his name John Wynn? John, yeah. Or Alicia. So I don't know what is going on there, which is, there is someone on there who did work at United. So maybe Alicia's gotten out of this now and the other United person has taken it over. But
maybe we're blocked.
One new post today, I don't know, obviously it's a private group, I can't see what it is, but yeah. Okay, it's not even really surprising, it shouldn't be surprising that there's these people on Facebook who are alluding that they work, like lying and say that they work for Facebook and work for Mark Zuckerberg when they clearly don't. Maybe his group did get, which is why we can't find it. But
oh yeah, there was more crazy in that article about it, but I couldn't be bothered because it was so ridiculous already. But he like had some company with like Zuckerberg in it on his Facebook profile as his job. And then the newspaper obviously researched that company and it like doesn't fucking exist. But I just think, I feel like you could do a whole episode on how like, I don't want to say crazy, but unhinged people like seem to attach themselves to missing persons cases sometimes. I don't get it, but it definitely happens a good amount.
And I know it's not really essentially a missing persons case, but it was at the start. But this, when you were reading that, some of the people and the things that were going on reminded me of Libby and Abby.
Yeah.
When people just did crazy, crazy things and, inserted themselves in the case.
Mm-hmm.
So
it reminds me of Delphi, like Mostly Harmless, Maura Murray, like all of them. There's always just like some people who like make it like their life's mission to solve this case for some reason, which is like great, but you're doing it the wrong way.
Yeah, it's so there was a page too called The Disappearance of Jake Sefolia. I had 2,000 members, but that's gone.
And that must have been that one because I think when I read this article, it said it had 1,700 members.
It said that even though this the article that I'm reading was from January, but it said it only had half a dozen posts since late November, which is interesting because it's still a very recent missing persons case and there's still things happening. So it's interesting that there was just no content.
I feel like it said that he posted that video that I was reading the quotes from in November. So maybe he posted that and everyone's like, we got to get out of here.
There was one little interesting piece that I wanted to add is that in January, I think it was around middle of January, United have said that Jake is no longer considered an employee of theirs.
Yeah.
They took him, even though he was his job title was Senior Vice President of Worldwide Sales. Mm-hmm. But they've basically gotten rid of him from the website. He's no longer an employee, but they said they hadn't, as of January, found his replacement yet.
I wonder if that has to do with like the criminal investigation or if it's just because like he's missing and probably dead or...
When you think about, like, what could the criminal investigation be about? Like,
I don't know.
My first thought would be something fraud or money related.
That would be my first thought too, but you never know. Like, it could literally be, like, child porn, sex ring.
Or drugs or something like that. But I feel like that, and I know that it's not, we shouldn't expect United to keep him as an employee forever if he's not coming back, but it's interesting that they...
like made a statement on it almost.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Like, is that like Alan White's job is like, nope, he doesn't work here anymore.
Yeah. And it's maybe they are making that the reason that they've kind of made this public and made a bit of a statement leads me to think that they're kind of trying to cut ties with him.
Yeah.
So maybe they know more about whatever the criminal investigation's for.
Yeah. But with this one, I'm more leaning towards just from it being like a place that he went running at, like telling people he wanted to get away and having stress and drinking a lot and managing two girlfriends. I feel like either suicide or he went off and had a misadventure.
Yeah, I would say more likely I believe this one is suicide. I know it does happen. I just don't think it happens as often as people think where someone runs away to start a new life.
I feel like that is hard. Like,
hard. Yeah.
Unless he did have like some outside shady bank accounts from his money laundering. So it's like, I mean, I guess so, but I'm more late. He seemed like pretty much like an emotional wreck where I don't think he would have pulled it off according to what people are saying.
When I was Googling to kind of maybe try and see if anyone else knew about the criminal investigation, I read somewhere that someone had posted what it was about, but then they went and deleted their comments. So apparently there's a Global Business Travel Association and they have been kind of under a bit of controversy because there's been a whistleblower who's alleged misconduct. So it says things like there's a hostile working environment for women and racial minorities, basically misusing his expense allowance and things like that. So I think that people are insinuating or, you know, maybe not people, maybe one person insinuated that may be something that Jake was involved in.
It could be because a lot more people are coming out and talking about things like that lately.
Yeah, so it says, like, there's another article and it says another GBTA board member resigns. And that interesting because the person who resigned in this article was the senior vice president of sales. So it says they've initiated an investigation into allegations. You know, the person alluded to him maybe being involved with the GBTA. So June 3, 2019, Jake was named as the new vice president of the Allied Leadership Council for the GBTA. It says, Jake Sifolia is a well-respected and trusted leader as well as a tireless advocate for GBTA and I'm thrilled to welcome him. His over 20 years of experience and insight make him an asset to our organisation and industry. I look forward to working closely with Jake. So that's interesting that company or, you know, organisation was under investigation and...
So he was replacing someone who had resigned?
Yeah, well, I think so.
And probably resigned because of this controversy, it seems.
It doesn't really say. Oh, here it does. It says, Sifolia will take over this position from Dorothy Dowling, Chief Marketing Officer and SVP of Best Western Hotels, but she was elevated to the position of ALC President. So she wasn't fired then. I don't know if she's been, you know, removed now. But that's interesting that there are those allegations.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he goes missing. But then, like, in saying that, that was 2019. He only went missing in 2020. Mm-hmm. You think that it sounds like he probably would have come in when all these things were happening already.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Who knows? It'll be interesting to see if anything else comes of that.
Yeah, I'm definitely leaning towards suicide with that one. He seemed distressed, plus with the criminal investigation. And I feel like having two girlfriends is also a sign of just like living an unhappy, distressed life.
I would be surprised if this isn't a suicide, but who knows? Or, yeah, some type of misadventure.
Yeah, like he went out into the wild and couldn't handle it.
I think that's it.
Yeah, so that's it for both those cases. You know, disappointing that they're both still unresolved and we don't have a final ending, but hopefully one will come this year and we'll be able to talk about it then.
And I'll put all the stuff up on the blog about both cases if you want to check it out and have a read. So you can go to the blog at truecrimesocietyblog.com and you can discuss it at truecrimesociety.com.
There's videos for both of their last sightings at the gas station if you want to give them a look, see if you can get a vibe for anything.
Yeah, see if you can see anything that we've missed.
As always, join our forum at truecrimesociety.com, and the blog is now at truecrimesocietyblog.com. So make sure to check those out.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter.
Yep. As we've been saying, our Facebook group, we are not dismantling, but it's not our main point of
platform anymore.
Yeah, communication with everyone anymore. So make sure you join us on truecrimesociety.com, Instagram, Twitter, all that. And we will see you guys next week then. Hope you have a good week. Thanks for the memes. Haven't said that.
We'll see you soon.
Bye.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.